Hello, listeners. You're very welcome to this, the iWin podcast. Don't forget to check us out on the web at www.iwin.ie. Today, I'm talking to Elaine Butler from the Circular Design Institute about the circular economy and sustainability. So, Elaine, thank you very much for joining me today and taking the time to educate us about the circular economy. So, to start off, maybe you can tell us a bit about yourself and give us a bit of background, please.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for having me. Delighted to chat to you today. So my background is in furniture design and interior architecture, and I worked in that for 15 years and then had a short hiatus in policy development for an environmental political party. But I wanted to get back into design. I didn't really know how I was going to reconcile sort of the wasteful nature of interior architecture with my understanding about the limits of the planet and the climate crisis we were in. And then an opportunity came up to do a master's in product design for the circular economy in NCAD. And that just seems to be a perfect solution. So I completed that in 2021. And now I focus on helping manufacturers and construction companies to see how best to pivot to prepare themselves for the circular economy and to capitalize on the opportunities that that provides.
Okay, well then, when we're talking about the circular economy and circular design, there's sometimes a bit of a lack of understanding out there and a kind of a disconnect between talking about it and actually implementing it. And there's information of how to do it, but not necessarily, you know, there's missing steps. So what is the circular economy and circular design?
Yeah, and to be honest, it's actually quite a simple concept, and it's some of it is going back to the way we used to do things. And I think there's an awful lot of noise out there that could be confusing for people. But really, the circular economy is one way of running a country to so that its operations are more sustainable. So, you know, a country is trying to generate wealth and income to run the services like the schools and the hospitals. And at the moment, the way we do that is very linear and it's very wasteful. And so it's trying to generate that wealth and that flow of money so that we aren't damaging the planet and that we can ensure the continued existence of humanity. It involves achieving one of four key principles. I've added a fourth one in. A lot of people just talk about three, but for me, it's reducing the use of resources, number one, because if you're being wasteful with resources, then you're not going to be circular. Designing out waste or minimizing it as much as possible. So if you can design something so that you don't have offcuts in the first instance, then that's always better than even if you do reuse those offcuts or recycle them. Keeping materials in use for as long as possible, often through repurposing, remanufacturing, repair, and then recycling if needs be, or composting at the end of its functional life. And then lastly, and it's the one that tends to be neglected quite a bit, is regenerating natural systems so that whatever we put into the ecosystem or the biosphere is helping to nurture it. And we're not just leaning on Mother Nature and hoping that she will resolve some of our issues, which we've done in recent years with a lot of compostable plastic, which although is compostable, doesn't really necessarily feed the soil and so can be putting more pressure on our ecosystem than it can bear. And then circular design, it's a shorthand for design for the circular economy. And so really at its essence, it's about designing products and services so they fit in with the circular economy and they can deliver one or more of those four key principles.
Okay, well, just in terms of sustainability, wood manufacturing is well placed to take advantage of this new economy because wood is a sustainable resource to an extent, but obviously there's caveats to that. But fundamentally, we should be well placed to take advantage of the new economy.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it does have a lot of potential to be, you know, it's a renewable resource. It absorbs carbon when it's growing. And if that material is made into a long lasting product, then you're trapping that carbon until the product goes for composting or incineration at the end of its functional life. So yeah, there is great potential. Sometimes you find though, when a material is deemed to be inherently sustainable, there can be a lot of waste. You know, I know of factories that are burning timber offcuts during the summer when they don't really need the heat. You can understand doing it in wintertime to heat a factory, but they're burning it to get rid of it and putting heat into the atmosphere when we really don't need it. So, and because it's something that's renewable and we don't see that as being as bad as maybe burning, you know, plastics or, you know, less renewable materials. So I think definitely it has a high potential, and I think Ireland's very well placed to benefit from that. But we'd still need to consider the four principles of the circular economy when we're using it.
Okay, well, I mean, I suppose when you look at something and think that it's a sustainable material or sustainable, you can become slightly complacent then about how you manage the waste. So it's important to stay on top of every aspect of it, as you say. Just on that, how prepared are Irish companies for the circular economy?
It does depend on which company you're talking to. I think that a lot of companies are doing work in the background to look at how they could shift to being operating more sustainably and fit in with the circular economy. But they're not declaring it publicly. And I think partly that's a fear of being accused of greenwashing and maybe having some of their ideas stolen by competitors. Thankfully, the government are being very supportive of pilot projects in companies to explore this. And there's a lot of funding around. Now, it wouldn't be massive amounts. So when you're buying equipment, it might not necessarily cover the cost of expensive equipment. But pilot projects where you're exploring, you know, take back service, recovery and resale, or you want to look at how you might minimize waste in the design process. You know, there's innovation vouchers that you can get so you can work with colleges. So I think that Irish companies, a lot of the, I would say, medium sized ones are dipping their toe in the water and they're definitely progressing things in house. And you might not be hearing about it, but the SMEs and the small single makers, even though a lot of their work might be low impact because they're generally very conscious of waste, even when it comes to energy even or materials, but they haven't really thought about things like what happens to their product after they've sold it. And that's really going to play a large part in the circular economy in the future. So I do think SMEs and single person operators are struggling to apply the resources they need to. And I want to make sure that they don't get left behind, because they make up a large percentage of makers in Ireland, you know, and I think that they do some really stunning work. So I think it does depend on who you're talking to. And I find that the larger the company, the more resources they have to put into it. Because sustainability and circularity, it's not rocket science. I think the most difficult part of it is to make sure that you're delivering value to customers when you implement circular strategies. So if you're doing a take back refurbishment and resale, you know, what do your customers value? Like, what will they be interested in buying something secondhand? Is that a different market? So I think that that's really the tricky part of applying the circular economy. But one thing I'll say about it is it is straightforward. It's not complicated, but it does take time. So companies would need to invest more time at this stage before it becomes urgent, because it will become hugely urgent over the next couple of years as legislation comes on stream. But this is the time to start looking at it when you're not under huge pressure legislatively.
Yeah, and well, that's basically why I'm talking to you. It's to try and get ahead of the curve, because I know that this is the direction of travel. And when you say about legislation, there will be legislation coming in that will affect the furniture manufacturing industry, for example, going forward. So why wait to make the adjustments? Wouldn't it be better to be prepared, as you say, while we're not under pressure?
That's it, because eventually you're going to be paying taxes and levies on the carbon that you emit, and also the carbon that's emitted to the materials you buy. I mean, already they're bringing in a tax on materials such as steel, iron and aluminium. It's going to start in 2024, and they're just measuring what the levy would be on those materials if they're produced in countries that don't pay carbon tax. And so if you're importing your steel or aluminium from China, that in the future is likely to have a tax on it. And so, like, tax is not something you want to invest that in your company rather than paying it on carbon tax. And so if you're able to make not necessarily make the changes now, but know which changes you could make and what the costs are involved. And then I'm always saying to companies, keep an eye on them because prices are dropping. And if some of the changes become cost neutral in the future, so keeping an eye on them allows you to jump when they have become cost neutral. And there's also another very important piece of legislation that is coming down the track, and it's going to come in fast and hard. And I'm not sure Irish companies are very well prepared for it. It's called the Eco Design for Sustainable Products Initiative. And we're looking at that coming online in 2024. We're not sure whether the full regulation will be on board at that stage, but substantially they'll be starting to implement it. And that's going to introduce on a good thing, it'll be mandates for green public procurement. So up to date, it's all been guidelines and targets, whereas there'll be actual hard percentages that governments need to achieve. And so that will favour companies that are able to deliver sustainable and circular products. But one of the issues is that some companies might be able to deliver it, but they haven't measured it, and they're not in a position to communicate how sustainable or circular the products are. So they might lose out on points by just not having the information to deliver. So as well as mandates for green public procurement, there'll be digital product passports. And so that will have all the information that's required for a customer, a retailer, but also somebody who recycles or refurbishes. So they're able to get the information to know what the materials are in that product, and so how it needs to be repaired or recycled at the end of its life. And then an EPR scheme, which I think is probably going to be the most onerous on manufacturers and retailers. So at the moment, when unless you're involved in producing electrical equipment, that's an example of an EPR scheme. With furniture, once you sell it, that's it. You don't have any more responsibility for it unless it fails, unless it doesn't perform as expected. But with EPR schemes, your responsibility will continue for the entire use cycle of the product. So you may have to put in a take back scheme in order to avoid increased eco-modulated levies. And eco-modulated levies are levies that are based on the sustainability or circularity of a product. So having your responsibility or liability extend beyond the purchase point is quite a change for manufacturers and retailers. And I was part of a discussion there recently. They were talking about scoring the disassembly of a piece of furniture, and they were counting the removal of a part as being a step in the disassembly process. And somebody brought up the issue of sofas. When you think about sofas, the fabric is applied to the frame with probably thousands of staples. And the argument went down the road of, well, if measuring the step results in the removal of a part, then each of those staples would be considered a part. And so you could end up with, as a sofa being calculated as having 1,000 steps to get it to disassembled, which would really go against it when eco-modulated fees are being calculated, which is why, IWEN is so important in being part of those discussions and informing them. Now, maybe it's unavoidable and it's the right way to go, but it would actually be a huge disadvantage to makers of upholstered furniture if calculations like that were to go forward. So it's worth them looking now at how they can upholster furniture without using thousands of staples, So tackling it at both sides, having the conversation, but also looking at how you can design it better to be easier to disassemble. So that's the Eco Design for Sustainable Products Initiative, which really is going to come on stream in the next couple of years, and it's going to be a game changer for anyone that makes or sells physical products in Europe.
And the Eco Design for Sustainable Projects or products is at a European level, isn't that that's the way it's being run? So it is coming down the tracks at the moment. It's in process. It's being discussed. There's negotiation between manufacturers and European policymakers. But this is definitely the direction of travel, is my understanding.
The EU are on the track to implement the circular economy, come hell or high water. And they've gone so far down this road, they're not turning back. They have had consultations on that particular piece of legislation. There are bodies that are drafting standards to help manufacturers prepare for it. It's absolutely going to happen. And even though it's a Europe-based legislation, there will be requirements that any products that are sold into Europe, it will have it applied to it. So effectively, it becomes a worldwide legislation, unless you're just selling domestically in a non-EU country, which isn't likely unless you're a small operator. But yeah, it's going to have a huge impact. You're already seeing the US is starting to gear up to comply with EU legislation because a lot of their companies will be selling into the EU. We're seeing that already on the, particularly the electronics front. So yeah, it's going to be, in a way, I think Europe is speeding ahead almost faster than some of the countries can keep up. Northern Europe is a little bit further ahead when it comes to the circular economy. Ireland is coming, you know, moving quickly, but I definitely don't think that it has enough practical applications of the circular economy to inform companies. And I know the government is keen to support that. So there's a knowledge gap there that we really need to address if we don't want to fall behind.
Well, again, I mean, that's why I'm talking to you. It's the knowledge gap, because how can you prepare for something if you are not informed about it or you don't know where to go for the information? And, you know, obviously, being Irish, we want Ireland to be successful on the European and world stage as regards this.
I think we're well placed in that we're quite well connected with one another and globally, partly, I think, because of the diaspora. And so we are well placed, once we put our minds to it, to become a leading force in this. I'd be very confident about that. But it's applying that knowledge and sort of getting all your ducks in a row and doing all the research. So, you know, I'd always be encouraging companies to find out where they're at now. You know, measure your energy waste material usage for the most standard year. And so for a lot of companies, that's 2019 now, because COVID was just crazy and affected all of the figures. But and that once you have that information, you can calculate your scope 1 and 2 carbon footprint for the company. And that's a good starting point, because you'll need that for tenders in the future. You're likely to need it for tenders. And it's not a difficult thing to do at all. Actually, the government have a really good website that you can do it on. But you do need to have your information about the energy used in the water and material, not so much materials for that scope 1 and 2 carbon footprint, but material usage is very good for when you want to see where you can have impact on your waste levels and where you need to focus circular design strategies. And then I think a huge one for all companies involved in making physical goods, including those in Ireland, is to start tracking your supply chains. One thing I've noticed talking to companies is a lot of people put down an agent in the UK or Europe as their supplier, but it's not really. I mean, often the material is coming from the Far East originally. It might be coming through an agent, and a lot of companies aren't aware of the origin. And they may not even be aware of where the raw materials start out. And suppliers are only beginning to get geared up to provide that information. So it's a very long process. You can work with platforms that, you know, online platforms that make it easier to track it. But a simple Excel sheet and lots of emails is the low cost and the low tech way of doing it. But finding out where the raw material for your aluminium is coming from before it goes to the processor and before it goes to the agent, because that will show your exposure and your liability when it comes to these levies that are going to be applied in the future. And also you'll have an idea of scale and volume, so you'll be able to talk to other suppliers that might be Europe based or they might be low carbon, which at the moment might be more expensive. But by knowing how much you order and what it's currently costing you and how much those low carbon Europe-based companies are going to sell it for, you'll know when it makes sense to switch. And then finally, I think for companies, they should look at their circular business strategy and which one is most appropriate to their company. So, for instance, like if you export most of the products that you make, then a take back scheme or remanufacturing scheme here in Ireland is just not going to make sense. But if you find that your largest market is in France, you might set up a remanufacturing hub in France. But you might find the French customers don't want to buy remanufactured goods, and therefore you end up selling it in another European country. And you might decide you move your remanufacturing hub to that country, because even with transportation, it makes sense. There was a story I heard which I thought was very interesting, where a lot of times, sometimes people will assume a circular strategy makes sense for everyone. So let's say design for durability or longevity. But there was a company that's involved in making goods from aluminium. And with aluminium, and they use aluminium and steel. And with steel, you always use a percentage of recycled steel, even when you're making virgin steel. And so this company, designing for longevity or durability wouldn't work for their business strategy, because they constantly need a supply of steel to recycle back into the manufacturing process. And so they would be better placed to come up with a business strategy where they have a take back scheme for recycling for new products in the future. Because if they design everything for longevity and durability, they might run out of the raw material to make new products. So I think that's the thing that takes a lot of head scratching and is best done when you're not under pressure. Every business is different, and different circular business strategies will suit different product types and customer bases. So what's important to your client? How can you make your business more circular? And how can you attach that to the value that your client appreciates, that you deliver, that no one else can? So I think that's one, those three steps: where you're at, start looking at your supply chain, and start thinking about which circular business strategy works best for your company.
Okay, just on the supply chains and on the cost and carbon taxes and things like that, if we source material more locally, now I know globalization was the big buzz, you know, and now we seem to be, the world seems to be deglobalizing and supply chains are changing, whatever. So if I was to support, or I was to source material in Ireland or say France, would that expose me to less of a tax under this new legislation than if I was to source it in the Far East or China or something like that? Or is that, yes, part of it?
In the carbon border tax, the one I was saying that they're bringing in, just from a recording point of view in 2024 for iron, steel, aluminium. So that's, it's the carbon border tax that's likely to make materials in non-EU countries more expensive ultimately. But it's hard to know whether the levy will just make the materials that are produced in a low carbon way in Europe on a par with those from Far East. I always think it's good to have this information to know when something becomes more cost effective. You don't, you know, if you find out that the material you're sourcing from non-EU countries has suddenly gone up in price, you don't want to be scrambling around then to find alternative suppliers. So look for alternative suppliers now and then keep an eye on the costs. It can't be assumed that local is always better. A lot of, let's say, if you're buying timber in Ireland, I mean, it's not necessarily grown in Ireland. So is, even if you buy it in Ireland, is it local? You know, it's hard to say. You might be better off buying directly from somebody in a European country if it's grown in that European country. And also, there's very, very few materials made in Ireland, and very few materials made from raw material that's made in Ireland. So I think that when I'm talking local, when it comes to materials, I'm really talking EU-based, because most of the materials that we'll be looking for will be coming from Germany or Eastern Europe, especially when it comes to timber and stuff like that. So it's tracking it and deciding what's the best option. When I know transport costs have gone up hugely for companies, but you may find that if a material is being sold in Ireland but being imported from Europe, the cost of transportation is embedded in the cost that it's been sold to you at, you know, so you're not going to be able to avoid the transportation costs. One thing I would say when it comes to materials and locality, one thing to bear in mind is the idea of using locally recycled materials. Now, currently, we don't have a lot of recycling infrastructure in Ireland. It is improving. And I think more will come on stream in the future. But if we have material on the island of Ireland that could be recycled or repurposed, then it should, if the legislation works well, be more cost effective to use that than to import virgin material, even from Europe. I'm not sure whether the legislation will achieve that, but in principle, that's what it should aim for. So it would be I'd be looking at different markets maybe for virgin material than I would be for recycled or repurposed material. If you could do that closer to home, I think it should be more economical in the long run.
It's an awful lot to take in. It really is a different way of doing things going forward. But we keep mentioning cost, and we've mentioned taxes, and you've even brought up Excel spreadsheets. So the question is this not going to be hugely expensive for businesses going forward?
I think it can be expensive in terms of staff time, actually. I think that that's where the expense is, because it, like you said, it is a new way of operating. In reality, some circular strategies can be cost saving and cost neutral. I mean, the cost of solar panels has come down substantially, and one factory owner that I was talking to says that they've calculated the payback is about 4 years now. So, I mean, that's substantially lower than it would have been, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And another company that I was working with, they calculated that they could save 35% on material costs by reusing components that they salvage from products that they take back. And that includes even the labor cost of disassembling and transportation. So there are potential cost savings in applying circular business strategies. But you do have to, I'm always suggesting to companies, do a test. So let's say you're not sure if it would work for you, then find a client that you can take product back from, measure how much, you know, you spend on the transportation and the time and the staff, assess the quality of the material you take back and see what the wastage is, calculate the waste cost, and do a calculation to see how much you potentially could save. All that information is very useful. And yes, it does take, I would say it takes more in human time and, you know, human cost than it takes in actual money out of the bank. And it depends how quickly you want to go as well. I always think it's a bit like, you know, if you want to get fit, considering it's January and it's probably at the forefront of most people's minds, you could go and you could join a gym tomorrow, and that's going to be quite expensive. Or you could put on a pair of runners, which most people have, and you could go and, you know, go for a walk or go for a jog. And so there's a different cost point for both of those, even though the objective is the same, maybe to get fit. And it's the same with circularity. There will definitely be some strategies that require investment, capital investment, but others which are very cost effective and really just require your time. And that's why I'm just saying, encouraging companies now to put the time in, because it will never be as cheap as it is now.
Yeah. So again, going back to why I'm talking to you, it's about educating yourself to be yeah, ahead of things. And in terms of the cost, you're talking about the human cost or the cost in HR or manpower. It kind of comes back to the time it takes to learn all this.
Yeah. There is quite a bit of training that, you know, the government have run some training courses, and I've heard of ones being run by colleges as well, which are very good at upskilling companies. But I did mention previously that there's also quite a bit of funding for pilot projects, so which can cover staff costs on projects. So the government have recognized that it is hard for companies to invest resources at this point in time. And so they're willing to fund some of those costs for companies. And some of the applications for funding can be onerous, like especially if you're going through Enterprise Ireland, but people who are Enterprise Ireland clients are probably used to that. And EPA projects require an awful lot of documentation, but there's innovation grants. There's the circular economy innovation grant scheme, which has a very simple form. And I think they were offering, now it was for companies with less than 50 employees, but I think they were offering up to 50,000 for projects, you know, which wouldn't cover capital investment in machinery, but could pay for somebody's salary for a year to work on a project, you know. So there's definitely funding opportunities out there. So I think it's worth mentioning that. And there's very good training programs as well for, if it's on energy, SEAI is a good one. The local authorities have the LEO and they often have training programs that they run. And MODOS is a very good circular economy training, not specific to manufacturing, but it's good for just a general understanding of the circular economy.
Well, here's a silly question for you, because we've kind of answered it in many ways. But what do you at the Circular Design Institute, what do you do? I mean, we kind of have a broad idea of what you do, but if you can break it down in steps, or just tell us a bit more about how you operate.
I think probably essentially I am a circular economy geek. I read okay. about it every day and follow what's happening, because I think it'd be overwhelming and there is an awful lot of noise out there. So I think I'm best placed to identify what's a genuine change in the way we operate and what's just window dressing and PR spin. And then I deliver talks and workshops to companies and design institutions on how to design for the circular economy and to do it in the most effective and efficient way, because I think that there's been almost too much academic research sort of on the theory of circular economy. And what we want to do is to find out how to apply it practically to industry so that it actually has a reasonable impact on the carbon emissions and the environmental impact of what we do, and how to do that in a profitable way. So talks and workshops, but also working with companies to help them draft a roadmap for how their business is best should position themselves in the circular economy, because like I said, every company is unique. And I will say that is guidance and mentoring for the company to implement. I think some companies think they can hire a consultant to come in and to tell them what to do, but that's if a consultant is offering to do that, then I think that's I would run a mile, because nobody knows your business like yourself. So it's having somebody to ask questions and to help you to draw up the roadmap for you to implement. It's a bit like health and safety. Nobody can give you a document to tell you how to run your business safely and prevent accidents if you don't implement it and make it work in your company. It's the same for sustainability. A consultant can advise you on what you could do, but unless you implement it and test it to see if it works for your business, then it's absolutely useless. So they're the ways. It's talks, it's workshops, it's developing roadmaps for companies to find out how they can best profit from the circular economy.
Okay, and just lastly then, where can we find you or information about the Circular Design Institute and the types of things that you do?
So the circulardesigninstitute.ie is my website, and I'm very active on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to find me. I'm going to be talking at a few conferences coming up this year, so you can hear more of what we've discussed today. And then I always update my presentations with any new developments in terms of legislation and also technical advancements, because as much as some aspects of the circular economy are harping back to the way we did things, like repair, some of it does require us to develop new technology when it comes to things like recycling. And I'm talking to somebody later today and getting an update on plans to recycle polyurethane foam in Europe. And I know there are some companies that have successfully developed a polyurethane foam from recycled foam. It's not currently available commercially, but I'm having a chat with somebody later who's going to update me on that. So those sorts of things. So, and I do a newsletter that comes out once a month where it's just the key developments in manufacturing, sustainable manufacturing and circular manufacturing. And so that can be a useful guide for people who just want to, in an easy, accessible way, to stay up to date with what's happening and not be overwhelmed by, you know, climate crisis news and we're all going to die. So you can subscribe to that on my website, circulardesigninstitute.ie, and it just comes out once a month. And I don't use it for any other reasons. You don't have to be worried about being spammed with product offerings or anything like that. If you sign up for the newsletter, you just get the newsletter. So that's where to find me. And then, or just give me a shout on LinkedIn. I'm happy to talk to anybody who wants to message me through there.
Okay, it'll be good for people to get the newsletter, because from the conversation that you and I have had today, it's an awful lot to take in, and you're the expert, but we all need to start catching up. So we need to be informed by you and to stay on top of this. But I have to say, Elaine, thank you so much for talking to me. I really, really appreciate you taking the time.
I'm delighted to, William. And so, like I said, I'm a circular economy geek, so talk about this stuff is a great way to spend a morning. So I'm delighted to chat to you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We'll leave it there and we'll talk again. So thank you very much indeed.